This evening, I would like to give you what may turn out to be a meandering reflection on the Holy Family. I say meandering because I can already tell it's starting to meander. Well, the problem is that let me just give you a little note on the side. Whenever I give a homily, I find two sources of reflection. One is my interior experience of interpreting reality through the prism of how I understand the gospel. And the second is the objective study of the gospel, so that when I apply it to my own life, it is, and to other people's lives, it is an authentic interpretation and doesn't come out totally skewed. When we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Family, the problem is that the Scripture does not give us just one viewpoint of family life. Family life is both lauded, praised, and also criticized in the Bible. So what I'm hoping to help you to see is both points of view, and then how we may see those two points of view and interpret them in such a way that they end up doing exactly what Jesus wanted us to do, which is to have a balanced opinion of family life. Let me begin by sharing with you a memory that I have. When I was a little kid, I was very cute. I was a very cute little kid. Had hair, had everything. And I was very skinny, by the way, very skinny. But when I went to grade school in Cuba, because I'm originally from Havana, Cuba, I went to a school run by the Jesuits, the Jesuit fathers and brothers. And it was a school called Belén, which in Spanish translate into English as Bethlehem. That was the name of the school. It was a big school. As a matter of fact, it's one of the weird schools that you could go literally from kindergarten through college at the same school. They had the whole thing. It was all Jesuits. But one of the things I remember is that, and then when we came to Miami and I went to another Catholic school, St. Louis School in Inglewood, Colorado, I still remember being rewarded with holy cards. Well, I don't know, you know, that we don't do that anymore. But if you got something right or something like that, you get holy cards. And the holy cards, they're not like baseball cards. They were really nice, you know, little holy cards. You would put them in your missal and stuff like that. And one of the holy cards that I still remember very clearly was a holy card of the Holy Family. And it was all done in pastels. It was Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. And they were pictured in a sort of an outdoor workshop where Joseph was doing something and Jesus was helping him and Mary was busy at a table doing something. But it was a very idyllic, peaceful, beautiful situation. And for as long as I can remember, whenever anybody talked about the Holy Family, that's what I always thought about, is that image in my head of, well, it's kind of like that, but it wasn't quite like that. It was because that one of the interesting parts about this statue that's out there in the narthex, and it's also in the garden, is that you never see Joseph holding Mary quite that intimately. But that's another issue. But the thing I remember was the idyllic situation, the peaceful situation. And whenever anybody spoke about the Holy Family, I never, ever pictured that my family was the Holy Family. My family, now, I want you to understand, I come from a very good family. I had a very good mom and a very good dad. I was very blessed. I had a very good brother and a very good sister. I still have them. My mom and my dad have passed away. But my brother, whose name is Fernando, he's 2 years younger than me. And my sister is 6 years younger than me. I'm 66, so you can do the math. So, when we were growing up, it was a loving household. Even though we were refugees, you know, this is the meandering part. That's why sometimes when you hear me talk about refugees or illegal aliens or stuff like that, I always have a hard time because I am one. I was one, a refugee. And we were Cuban refugees. So, but nonetheless, even when we got into, you know, my teenage years, my house, even though my mom and dad loved us tremendously, it was anything but a pastel situation. My brother and I, even though today we're very close, we used to fight each other like hell. It was, my sister lives in that same home. When I go to visit her, I still go downstairs and I see the dents in the wall where my brother and I would throw each other against the wall and sort of, I wasn't going to be a priest at that time, so. Okay. So there was plenty of conflict. And I still remember my mom periodically, she would say, in Spanish, she would say, "Oh, how come we can't be like," and she would mention some family down the block that seemed to be perfect. Because our family was chaotic. It was loving, but it was chaotic. And you know how, well, some of you may not know how Cubans are, especially. But whenever I used to bring people to my house, young kids to my friends to my house, Cubans tend to talk over each other and use their hands a lot and scream at each other. And my friends used to say, "Why are your mom's friends always fighting?" And they're not. I said, "No, that's just the way we are." You know, it's just like that's the way Cubans talk. And so a short way of saying that is that my life, my family life, I never considered it holy, ever considered that it was holy. And so the question that came, that comes into my mind is, well, if what was the real Holy Family? I didn't grow up in the Holy Family until I come to the reflection that if you, as a philosopher and a amateur theologian that I am, where did I learn about God? And it was through the love that was shared in my screwy, chaotic family. That was the school in which I learned about commitment. That was the school that I learned about being able to fight and still know that you love one another. That was the school that I learned about forgiveness and about teasing. I know I'll never forget my dad was a kind of a quiet, introverted man. My mom was the opposite. She was all over the place. And I still remember Dad would sit down to read his paper in the living room in an easy chair. And before he knew it, my mom would jump in his lap. And my dad would start to push her off and start saying, "Ay, chica, que no estoy para viejas ahora." Now, those of you who understand Spanish, that means, "Oh, you old lady, I'm not in the mood for old women now." And he would throw her off, and she would jump right back on and laugh and cover him with kisses and all of it. And my dad would feign, wiping them off and stuff like that. And so I saw love. And the older I have gotten, the more I look back and I think, oh my God, that was the Holy Family. That was. You see, the word holy means the presence of God. That's what the word holy means. And wherever there is love, there is God. Wherever you learn how to love is your holy family. But here's where it gets a little more controversial. At least, not controversial. There's a psychological term that I always enjoy, which is the term dissonance. When you hold two different and opposing thoughts. When you look at the Bible, Jesus was obedient to his mom and dad. And you heard it in the prayer today about commending us to be like the Holy Family. But then you go into other sayings of Jesus. For example, if you love your mother, your brother, your sister, your husband or wife more than me, you're not worthy of me. The man that comes to say, "Let me go home and bury my father." And Jesus says to him, "Let the dead bury their dead. You come and follow me." Do you remember the time when Jesus was sitting down with his apostles and his mother and his family come and say, and somebody says to him, "Your mother and your brothers would like to speak to you." Now, if my mom and my brother and sister were in the back and I was sitting in a class and somebody said, "Your mom and your brother and sister are out there, they'd like to talk to you," I would probably go, oh, excuse me for a moment, okay? And I'd go and talk to my mom and my brother and my sister. Do you remember what Jesus says? Jesus turns to the person saying that his family's out there, and he says, "Who is my mother, my brother, and my sister?" And then he looks around, and he says, "These are my mother, my brother, and my sister. For he who does the will of God is both my mother, my brother, and my sister." Now, interesting here. You notice the absence of the word father. And the reason is because Jesus knew very much who his father was. Okay? But notice that Jesus is giving the importance not to blood. He's giving the importance to the spiritual, who you are before God. And as a matter of fact, if you remember, Jesus challenges the scribes and the Pharisees because they claim to be of the children of Abraham, meaning the blood children of Abraham. And what is it that Jesus says? "If you were truly Abraham's children, you would not be seeking to kill me." So notice, he overrides blood. And then other sayings, and it could go on and on. What is born of the flesh is flesh. And what is born of the Spirit is Spirit. And so you're constantly giving the New Testament both gives us a picture of a blood family, but I think it also gives us a picture of a greater understanding of family. A family of a common, you know, every time I want to use the word communion, I have started in my head to hear it differently. So many people say, I'm going to communion. But I hear it now, I'm going to common union. Because that's where the word comes from. Your family is a communion. It is a common union. Now the question really is it blood? And what the New Testament, I think, is saying is, no, it isn't blood. Now, it can include, and many times does include, people who are blood to you, because you've known them for so long and you have grown to love them. But I think what that Jesus was talking about is that family is much bigger than blood. And I can tell you that, especially for those of us who, like, for example, for me, I don't have my close blood family anywhere around. And so for me, my family has become the people that I have grown to love and the people who love me. And those are my family. And it has become rather curious that in many respects, and in probably most respects, the people who are in I love and love me are much closer to me than my blood family, who sometimes I don't even keep in touch with for various reasons. And so the part that I find very substantial in saying the Feast of the Holy Family is the word holy. Because I want you to notice that the word holy, and you all know that I am obsessed with etymology, which is the study of the history of words. And the word holy is directly related to the word holy. Now, I didn't just say the same thing. Okay. H-O-L-Y is directly related to W-H-O-L. Is it two L's? Two L's. Y. Okay? Like an wholly owned subsidiary. So when you're saying the holy family, what you're saying is that family in God's eyes is more complete than the family of blood. The blood family is your entrance point. You know, a good image of this, when you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you an injection is the entry point. The medicine does not stay with the entry point. It diffuses itself for the entire body. And so your family, your blood family, is the entry point that God used to bring you into this world. And in many cases, the people close to your entry point will be people that you love deeply. Our parents, our brothers and sisters. But there are many of us for whom that isn't the case. How many of us, and I don't know this, but how many people do I talk to who had horrible childhoods? and who are wounded from memories of abusive parents or, you know, or all kinds of things. And so for them, blood family is something less than desirable, or at least it brings up painful memories. But yet the human being in and of themselves has a sense of what family ought to be. You know, for example, I have known people who have had very abusive fathers, and yet something inside of them knows, even though they've never had an example of what a good father should be in their lives physically, they know instinctively what a good father ought to be. They know that. And so the fact that our families are not tribal, tribal's not a good thing. I mean, it can be as an entry point. But what Jesus was encountering in his own life was tribalism. And tribalism is when who you are is directed or directly related to your blood. And that's kind of silly. It's kind of silly. When I was growing up in Spanish culture, my family comes from Spanish descent. It was a big deal. I still remember this. It was a big deal as to who your family was and whether your family was nobility or not nobility, or you, whether you were a commoner or not. And it was a big deal. Do you have noble blood? Until I grew up and I figured out that that was probably a lot of BS. BS, by the way, means blessed stuff. I can't help what you're thinking, okay? It's blessed stuff. But it's not true. It's not true. Each other's blood is the same. And so, how many times have we restricted our families by either our imaginations or by the actual fact of our abusive parents or fights we've had with brothers and sisters? How many times have we neglected to see that God is actually sending people into your life to be your family? People that may not be blood related to you. Why do you think we have the gall every Sunday to say the Our Father? Now, sometimes I think, do we really mean that? Do we really mean Our Father? And I think Jesus was very, very literal when he said, who is my mother, my brother, my sister? He was not talking just metaphorically. He was talking about the fact of blood is overridden by spirit. And we enter into family with each other by common union. And especially the Eucharist is what brings us into closer common union with each other. And you can't be in common union with everybody. But at the same time, you are in a different sense. I personally could not live without my family. And I'm not talking about my blood family, as much as I love them. But I'm not in direct contact on a regular basis. And so, the Bible has this tension, saying, God has given you a group of people through which you enter this life. And many times you will be close to them and love them primarily. But he also gives you people that come into your life who have nothing blood-wise to say to you or to, in relationship with you. And sometimes those people end up being closer family than even your own blood. And so what we're celebrating today is this whole concept of holy family, which ultimately, at the very top, has our Father. Our Father. That makes us all brothers and sisters. We are not yet advanced enough that we get beyond. We still tend to segregate ourselves according to race and culture and money and stuff like that. There's a sociologist at Rice University who says that people naturally gravitate towards PLUs. PLUs stands for people like us. And we self-segregate. We self-segregate all the time. And I'm not telling you it's easy not to segregate, because we're just more comfortable with people who kind of understand us and people who have our same customs. And there are prejudices in this world. And so the very fact that we gather here and that we say the Our Father is a reminder that family and holy family is greater than your blood and greater than your friends. And that we're called to live in a constant tension between blood and spirit. And that to be Catholic, so I always come back to that, to be Catholic, the word comes from the two Greek words kato holos, means concerning the whole, that you are in common union with people that go way beyond your blood. So, let me close this meandering reflection by just telling you to keep an eye out for family. Both for your blood, your insertion point, and for the people that come into your life. Sometimes welcome, sometimes unwelcome. But nevertheless, we've got to love them, because we get together with them and we have the gall to say, Our Father.